don't settle anywhere. Don't settle somewhere just because it's comfortable. Carry on doing the things that you're passionate about and are driving you and are going to be the things that you spring out of bed to want to do in the morning. And actually, if you're doing that and you're happy and you're being successful, then all of the things around taking leadership positions just happen naturally. You don't have to kind of have this plan, sit in a role, work up a ladder. If that's not what motivates you, just don't do it.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 36 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by Zosia North Bond, who is the CEO of Octopus Energy for Business, which works with companies to provide future-proof energy services, supplying them with 100% renewable and fairly priced power. Zosia also runs Octopus Energy's renewable generation arm, which recently announced the acquisition of a 2.8 gigawatt portfolio of renewable energy assets across 5 countries. And prior to Octopus Energy, Zosia was also the UK Managing Director of the Dutch utility Eneco BV. So she's got a great track record in senior leadership positions. In this episode, we cover a lot of ground, as always, and we got down to talking about how she is very unprotective of what she does as a leader, about striving to ensure that you're not doing the same thing and having the same conversations a year down the line, her top tips for leading in a crisis, and one that particularly resonated with me, particularly, again, around her use of language, around recruiting people that scare you. I know you're going to love this episode, folks, so without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Zosia North Bond. Zosia, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's fantastic to have you with us today. First of all, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. It's a wonderful spring day and I can see the sunshine outside, so I'm very happy, doing very well, thank you.
Amazing. And whereabouts in the country or the world are we talking to you from?
Yeah, so I'm currently in Octopus Energy's offices, which are just off Oxford Circus, so from the centre of London.
Amazing. And have you recently back in the office? Have you been in and out kind of throughout the various lockdowns in the UK? I'm just curious, kind of it's fascinating talking to somebody who's actually in an office these days. So what's going on there?
We've been quite regularly in the office because we work in the energy sector. We're classed as key workers because obviously we have to be here to keep the lights on. But I wouldn't say our model is necessarily essentially office-based. It's just it's been great to get people together where we can and where we felt comfortable, obviously, with social distancing in place. So we have had people in and out of the office actually throughout certainly the last two lockdowns where it's allowed in terms of space.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And what do you envisage the future being like for Octopus Energy in terms of kind of offices? I know I've jumped straight into a question. We'll pull ourselves back shortly into some of the planned questions, but seeing as we're on the topic, if I get something lots of businesses, leaders are thinking about, just curious kind of what's your thinking at Octopus Energy right now?
I think it has to be really whatever works for the business. I mean, what we've seen is while the flexibility and people being out of the office, I think was great for the first lockdown, and I think people really enjoyed almost not having the kind of structures of coming into the office. We've actually been quite overwhelmed during this period, probably since the beginning of the year, because we are finding lots of people want to come back in because they're really missing their teammates and in the environment that an office creates. So for us, I think we're very keen to make sure that we provide a place where people can come when they feel like that. But we've always had a more flexible model anyway. We're digitally based. Our systems and the way that we've set our systems up mean that you can take your laptop pretty much anywhere and work. So I think people have always had that freedom. But we found perhaps the opposite to some businesses I hear making announcements that they're going to be 100% remote working. And I think think from what we understand from our team is that's definitely not something they want. They want the ability to come in and definitely do some office-based work.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's sort of been my experience. I think it's possibly a dangerous assertion to make, right, that kind of everybody wants to be working from home full time. I think many people have enjoyed it a little bit, have enjoyed perhaps having a slightly lesser commute. I don't think we can underestimate the power, the need even for physical like relationships, being present with our colleagues. I was with a leadership team this week actually doing a 2-day offsite physically in person, which just felt strange and amazing. It was the first time the team had been together since October, and they basically spent half of the first day just talking about their experience of the last 6 months. And somebody summed it up perfectly. So they said, "No, Ben, we need to have these conversations. We've got 6 months of coffee machine catch-ups to have." And you could just see almost the sense of relief about just being physically present with each other and being able to connect on a human level in person rather than getting straight down to business through another MS Teams call.
Yeah, it does make a huge difference. It really, really does. And it's lovely to see, actually. I think we're at something like just under 50% capacity here, actually, at the moment. And it's lovely to see kind of people coming back together and having those kind of conversations that matter in the day, not just about business, but, you know, about how you might be thinking or feeling about something. All of the things that you do in the office around the sides, not just necessarily business done through a video chat. So 100% see that here as well.
And Zosia, I was just saying before we hit record how some people describe this podcast as a jazz set, where I ask the first few scripted questions and then normally go off-piste. I think I've just set a new record for myself by going off-piste before I'd even ask you the first question.
I'm very happy to be part of a new record. That's great.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for the support. With that all in mind, can I just rewind and just ask if you don't mind to start off just by telling us a little bit about what you're doing right now in terms of the job and a little bit of the career journey that's got you where you are, if you don't mind.
Sure, no, not a problem at all. So as I talked to you today, my role here at Octopus Energy is a very agile and wide one, I would say. So I'm the CEO of Octopus Energy for Business, and this business basically supplies green energy to businesses across the UK, and that can be anything from small SMEs, so coffee shops and hairdressers, all the way up to larger energy users like the Emirates Stadium, so Arsenal Football Club, for instance. And then the other business that I've recently just started to lead as well is Octopus Energy Generation. So this is a focus now on all of the things that your listeners will know about Octopus Energy. So our ability to offer great energy at great prices with great service using technology, but now putting those principles into the way that we produce energy as well. So we'll be owning wind and solar farms and taking a kind of technology-led approach, which will hopefully drive the cost down of producing electrons, which is very exciting. So that's me at Octopus Energy. In terms of how I got here, I had a very indirect route into energy, I would say. I was somebody that at school was very much into arts and things like history and geography, not into science. And I think a lot of people think that you're going to be quite scientific if you're in the energy market or in a role certainly like mine. I actually studied ancient history at university, and I studied a master's in Roman archaeology, which are not obviously energy related at all. But one of the things that I realised through doing those subjects I really loved was this constant questioning of why things were like they were. So if you were digging up a piece of rock or a piece of mosaic floor, it was never just about the fact that it was an object, it was about what the object signified. So I think that kind of single-mindedness about why and the motivation around asking the question why people did things and why things were important led me into actually, in the first instance, a career in public relations and marketing. And I loved being able to ask that question to clients frequently, trying to connect why the products that they were creating or the things that they wanted to talk about, why it was so important to communicate that to certain audiences. So I started off in an agency in London. I very quickly grew in that role, and I went on to run two marketing agencies eventually, and was very much enjoying that work. But I was under 30 at the time, and I was thinking to myself, I didn't want to, you know, be at the top of my game at necessarily that age. And I thought, well, there must be other things out there. And so that kind of continuing of kind of asking why I was doing it, I started to kind of look at other industries that I felt particularly exciting. And I think at that time, I was particularly conscious about climate change and companies that were doing things to really change the world and make the world a better place to live in. And one of my clients actually specialized in sustainable energy, and it was something I really, really enjoyed. And particularly this relationship between building things like clean energy assets, like a wind farm in a community, and the tensions and some of the positivity, but also the tensions that that could create. And it was something I actually found really challenging and really motivating. So to talk to somebody about why it was important to have a wind farm just up the road, or something that they could see out of their window, being able to kind of consult and talk about better ways of doing that to make these things that we're saying we need for the planet more acceptable to live with every day. So in talking to that company, they'd actually approached me and said, look, we'd love somebody to come in-house and in the first instance look at external affairs, I think was the role I held. So I went in and I did that for a little while, but within sort of 3 years, I actually went on to run that company. So I became the CEO, and it was a wonderful job of looking at how we built wind and solar farms, but not just making them about wind and solar and the fact that they fed energy into a national grid system. It was actually about thinking about giving them a purpose. So not just developing them, but saying, who is going to use this energy at the end of it? And who are we building it for? And being able to connect that to big end customers. So those wind and solar farms in the end were built for people like Mars and Unilever to make them 100% sustainable in operations in the UK, which was hugely exciting. I probably did that role for kind of 2 or 3 years. And funnily enough, I was in a business pitch, and we were doing some great things in sustainable energy with my previous company, but we came second in a pitch. And when I asked the business, who had you given this award to? And they said, oh, a company called Octopus Energy. And I thought to myself, well, I never heard of Octopus Energy. And when I looked up, I thought, well, they're just doing sort of domestic supply, and they look quite small. They're not doing big supply and big customers. And I just got in touch actually with Greg, the CEO here. And I said, I'd love to come and just have a chat about their model and learn a bit more. So I came in and he showed me around, and I have to say, I fell in love with it very, very quickly. We had lunch, and by the end of it, I kind of said, you know, I'd love to work here. And he said, you really need to work here. And the rest was history. So I came in to set up Octopus Energy for Business. And as I said at the beginning, I then have now gone on to also set up Octopus Energy for Generation, which will be our move into producing energy. So very exciting.
That's an incredible story, Zosh. It reminds me of a quote. I'm not sure who said it. It might have been allegedly a Leonardo da Vinci quote. It goes something along the lines of, and I'm going to butcher it here. It said, it occurs to me that people of accomplishment never sat back and allowed things to happen to them. They went out and made things happen to them, or words to that effect. It's just listening to you talk about how you ended up working at Octopus Energy just really reminded me of that quote. I think so often we can talk ourselves out of things, can't we, before we've even tried. So I think just if you don't ask, you don't get, right? It's just a great story of making stuff happen. And Sasha, what would you say are some of the main leadership lessons you've learned along the way? Clearly, you've held a number of sort of senior director roles, various kind of MD CEO roles now. Kind of, what would you say are the two or three main lessons you've learned?
Yeah, so I think one of the main ones is, don't settle anywhere. Don't settle somewhere just because it's comfortable. Carry on doing the things that you're passionate about and are driving you and are going to be the things that you spring out of bed to want to do in the morning. And actually, if you're doing that and you're happy and you're being successful, then all of the things around taking leadership positions just happen naturally. You don't have to kind of have this plan, sit in a role, work up a ladder. If that's not what motivates you, just don't do it. I think looking back at my career, I've certainly had very diverse experiences across a number of different sectors. And actually, what I really love about working here at Octopus, actually, when we sit down as a management team, one of the things that we talk about is, if this time next year you're doing exactly the same thing and thinking exactly the same way as you were the year before, then you're doing something wrong. And I always take that as a mantra in life, because it continues to broaden your experience. It continues to broaden leadership. It continues to force you to look at things in a different way. And I've loved my experience in this role in particular, because that has always been true. I look back over my 3 years here, and each year my role has been very different. And I've loved looking at the team around me that have come up very quickly behind me to do some of those roles that I was doing a year ago. And they're loving them and bringing people up to do them in the next year so that they can move on in the footsteps and carry on that way. And I think that's the way that you grow business. So I think it's really important that you never settle and you have the courage to move forwards, but not, you know, keep yourself in one place.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing mantra, actually. And the reason I say that is, I think so often as leaders, we can find ourselves caught in the trap of doing stuff that really somebody in our team should be doing instead of us. And I think that's often because perhaps we used to do the job that they were doing and we enjoyed it. We think we know the best way to do it, or we struggle to let go. So that, I get an impression that the mindset you just shared of, if you're looking back and you're doing the same thing you were doing a year ago, kind of something's wrong, really sort of guards against clinging on to stuff that perhaps you shouldn't do as a leader.
Yeah, it absolutely does. What you find is, as I said, you end up with a much more enriched, happy team that feels like they're progressing and moving forwards as well. And that's so important, because you never want people feeling like there's a kind of ceiling and there's a limit to where they can go. You want your team and your business to feel like it's limitless.
And Zosha, I saw, I think it might have been on a LinkedIn testimonial that somebody wrote for you when I was doing a bit of research / professional stalking, as we all tend to do on LinkedIn, where I think it said that your crisis management skills were excellent or second to none. That being the case, I wonder, have you got any top tips for leading in a crisis that you can share with the listeners?
Yes. Interestingly, I do have some crisis management experience stemming right from things like fizzy drinks and fried chicken up to kind of banking disasters and medical devices, for instance. But again, it's one of these things it's very practical. You always have to remain very calm in a crisis and be very factual. But also, when you're speaking to somebody about it, and particularly if it's public news, always be empathetic, even if you don't think you're at fault. Always be empathetic and always listen. But fact-finding is very, very important, and basing things on that. And then once you've got the facts, never spin the story. Just be very open and transparent about it. And be calm and encourage people to do the same, to be able to kind of solve resolutions, etc., as quickly as possible. So for me, it's about doing the things that are human in that situation. It's not about acting like a corporation or a big organisation.
And do you have any particular tactics that you use to stay calm, or are you just someone who is very calm and controlled? Because you do hear leaders say that it's about being calm, and it almost seems if some leaders do have this inbuilt ability to keep cool, keep their heads when those around them are losing theirs. Is that naturally you, or is that something you've had to work at and find strategies for?
Yeah, I think, funnily enough, I think it's probably natural to me. I mean, in my personal life, I'm actually a horse rider, and very often I take people on horse rides. And people that are learning to ride will give them leads and that kind of thing. And I think growing up in that environment, I had to be very naturally calm, because you have to be when you've got kind of a ton animal and a very nervous person. So I think that probably really helped. But I think actually in business, what's really important is surrounding yourself with people that you really trust, that you know in those times when you need them, if there is a crisis, are going to be able to calmly give you facts, data, information that you need, and support that you need, actually as well, is really, really important. So I think for me personally, it's probably a blend of both. But if you're not a naturally calm leader, it's about having people around you that give you that confidence as well.
Yeah, got you. That makes sense. And Zosha, if we sort of pull everything you've shared already with us today together, sort of your experience of leading a crisis, your experience of doing a number of senior leadership roles now, what would be your top few pieces of advice you'd give to somebody who's getting ready to step into their first MD or CEO role? If they're perhaps sitting there at their desk at home, starting to build out their 90-day plan, kind of to quote that book, kind of what would your top bits of advice be?
Oh dear, you say 90-day plan. I would say don't do your 90-day plan because you're never going to stick to your 90-day plan because there's going to be things as you're learning a role that you don't know are going to come up. And you'll end up in a 90-day plan looking in a rearview mirror. So you're looking back at what you wrote on day one, not changing with the situation, and you need to constantly look forward. So I would say don't overplan it too much, actually. And I'm very much a person here at Octopus Energy. We're not an organization that looks too much at plans and processes, because you have to be in the here and now. And I think that's super important for leaders, is to actually respond to the environment around them, because it's constantly changing. And we've seen that in the last year, I think, in ways that we've never seen it before. So the unpredictability of it. So that would be the first thing. You know, fine if you're a planning person, perhaps put it down, but don't treat that as your Bible. Be human about it and live in the moment and enjoy it. I would also say, you know, don't be something you're not. Be yourself. When I have kind of grown up in business, and certainly coming into the energy market, I always felt very different. I always felt, because of my background of coming from a kind of historical place rather than being an engineer, or indeed a man in some instances, that I really stood out. And I remember actually quite starkly when I talked in my first kind of CEO role in the energy space to the chairman about kind of why it was me that had been identified for that. And he turned around and he said, you know, in this world, and the energy world as it was then, this was 10 years ago, it's much more diverse now, and I do appreciate that. He said, I don't see many women who actually are confident enough to act like a woman in it. They tend to, at senior level, want to start beginning to take on male traits. And he said, it's something that you never did and have never done. You've always been very genuine to who you are. You've always been genuine to the fact that you're female and you're different. And you've got here entirely in your own right, because you're equally as good as anybody else. And it was a big lesson. And it was funny to me, because I was reading something recently, and I think it's actually a Marilyn Monroe quote, where she said something like, I don't mind living in a man's world as long as I'm allowed to be a woman in it. And actually, that's kind of how I felt about energy, certainly early in my career, not so much latterly. But one of the things I have always stuck with as a mantra is just being myself. It's not trying to be anything I'm not, because being yourself is good enough. It's got you to where you are.
Sasha, I think that's an amazing thing that you've just shared, actually. And the reason I say that is so many guests on the show, and this is probably nearly all, or certainly many of the male guests on the show, when I've asked them a similar question, I've often asked sort of, was there a point when your leadership kind of shifted and kind of when things changed? Even if I didn't ask that question, they ended up answering that question in a roundabout way. And nearly every one of those male MDs and CEOs said, there came a point where I realized I'd spent years trying to be somebody other than who I was. And the moment at which I stopped doing that and started being authentically, congruently me, people started following me more willingly, and I started delivering even better results for the business. So that's, I guess, a man trying to be something other than he is in probably the generation they was first stepping into their roles in a man's world, if I can use that phrase. And kind of here you are being absolutely unapologetically you in that world and delivering great, great results for it, which as a father of a young daughter, kind of, that's very, very, very inspiring, actually. So thank you for sharing that.
No, not a problem. Not a problem.
And one of the other questions I wanted to ask, Zosha, I mean, it's particularly relevant right now, the last 12, 14 months that we've had. And again, I'm really curious to hear your answer to this, because I really get an impression you as a leader and at Octopus Energy, you put a lot of focus on people and the team. So what do you sort of personally do to keep your team motivated and sort of inspired despite facing real conflicts, challenges, obstacles as we have in the past 14 months?
This is super interesting, because in hindsight I look back and the way we established the business from day one, because we were a startup back in 2016, was to do things differently from the outset. So to kind of work as if we lived in this century, not the last one. And we used very digital first principles. We built our technology in such a way that we were going to serve customers in the way that they should be served. And by that, I mean most energy companies, you'll kind of call up and you'll go to a department because you've got a problem and you want to kind of solve the problem. And they'll say, well, we can do this part of it, but we're going to need to put you onto somebody else to clear your balance. And then you'll speak to that person. They might direct you somewhere else. So one of the things we wanted to do with our technology from the outset was solve that for the customers, so they could just go to one person that could do most of the problem solving for them. And actually what that meant, it was that we could actually develop kind of cohorts of customers that would go into certain teams, so groups of customers. So if you called in, you would speak to the same team rather than being kind of transported around an organization, because within that team, they could solve absolutely everything at the touch of a button through our technology system. The great thing was, the knock-on effect of that was that we really empowered and motivated people to almost run mini businesses in their own right. So I would say, looking here across the wider Octopus Energy team, we've probably got, you know, 20, 30 budding CEOs that run their own little divisions of customers that can be, you know, earning very, very big revenues in their own right. And they'll be doing anything from solving very simple kind of customer inquiries to onboarding those inquiries to looking at kind of debt balances to balancing what their portfolio is doing, all of those things. And what I think that therefore enabled us to do going into lockdown is they still have that ability to feel very empowered in what they were doing and run their own section of the business, little section of the business that contributed to the bigger Octopus Energy. So even though, you know, at times people have been in their homes doing things differently, things haven't changed necessarily because they've had the right tool, which is this digital technology approach. And we've also seen them be extremely empowered about the way that they choose to run their teams as a result of that as well. And different people have tried different things. Different things motivate different teams. So you see lots of kind of team bonding, of course, going on, lots of kind of activities where sometimes they obviously will come into the office where space allows, those types of things to keep people motivated. But I think that ability early on in the way that we set the business up in thinking about digital principles and the fact that you could log in anywhere in the world to do your job, and then also empowered people to take responsibility for customers in the way that they do, has really actually helped with mindsets going into lockdown. And certainly, I would say, is one of the keys to our success. We always talk about technology in our company, but we would be nothing without our people. And the keys to success has been those two things combined to keep people motivated about running their own part of the business.
What you just shared is fascinating, because for me it sounds like some real world proof of some theory. So a lot of the best stuff around motivational theory says one of the universal motivators is autonomy. So that's choice around the work that you do and choice around how you do the work that you do. And it just sounds like Octopus Energy, you give that to people in spades, which is probably why things have gone so well for you the past 14 months and you was able to adapt, right?
Indeed, absolutely. It's so important is the fact that you trust and empower people to do their roles. And as I said, it's been wonderful to see leadership across the organisation really take responsibility for driving our business forwards, even during the most difficult times. It's brilliant.
Yeah, fantastic. And Zosha, I'm just conscious of your time and indeed listeners' time. So I've got a few slightly quicker fire questions to finish, that's okay. I'm just curious, what do you do personally to continue to grow and learn and develop as a leader?
I always make sure personally that I'm not protective of what I do. I talked a little bit earlier about not doing the same things year on year, and I think that's really important. One of the things I always tell myself when I look forwards is, you know, what's got me here isn't necessarily going to get me there. So one of the things that I always do is when I'm looking for talent to join the team, I make sure that we've got people on the team that are very positive people and very yes, you can people, but they actually also have to be quite sharp and they have to scare me, because I need people that scare me to keep me sharp and to keep me motivated and to keep me hungry about moving on. I always make sure that I surround myself with excellent people. It's super important.
That's amazing. And are there one or two books perhaps that you find yourself recommending a lot, going back to, or a couple of books have really had a sort of big impact upon you?
Yes. Interestingly, I suspect one of them from your autonomy remark, actually, a couple of minutes ago, you'll know, which is Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us by Daniel Park. And it's basically saying that people aren't driven by working for bonuses and being kind of financially rewarded in that way. Actually, you will get lots better and build better businesses when you give people autonomy, when they feel that they're really mastering what they're doing. So they're getting better all the time at what they do, and also making sure that they have a real purpose. So that's kind of super interesting in terms of the way that that's written. And definitely I use some of those principles in the way that I lead Herald Personity. The other one is not a business book at all, but it's something in the last year that's really got me through a couple of occasions, and that is the book by Charlie Maxey, which is The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. And in there, it's a story, but there are so many beautiful illustrations and comments, and my favourite of which is one where there is a boy sitting on the horse and he says to the horse, "There's such a long way to go." And the horse says, "I know, but look how far we've come." And I always think that's really important when you look at life, which is, you know, there can be a lot on your plate when you get up in the morning, but always celebrate where you've come from and always celebrate your successes and remember what's got you there. And it's going to be enough to get you to the next level. So that book I find really wonderful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that, with the sentiment of that, Zosha. I think it's absolutely important for leaders to be looking forward, and you touched on this, but also I think it's so important to celebrate wins, successes, and even sort of review and deconstruct where you've come from. And I think so often we don't do that enough. We can be very good at analysing and critiquing things when they haven't gone well, but we don't celebrate and review and deconstruct the wins, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it reminds me, I actually bought a picture that is on my staircase that I pass every morning, with that precise illustration to remind me of that fact, that don't forget where you came from and be proud of it, no matter what faces you.
Yeah, absolutely. Zosha, one final question. Do you have any particular routines, ways of working, habits or anything like that that is particularly powerful and helpful for you, that kind of helps you stay focused, play at your best, stay energized, anything like that you can share with the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Less so about business, but it's the things that support me to do well in business. And I alluded to earlier, I'm a horse rider. And actually, I find the way that I've built relationships with horses really help the way that I lead in a business. And I say that because you have to earn a horse's respect. You can't just be given a title because they don't understand that. So it's the way that you act towards them It's the way that you work with them in your relationship. So if you're riding them, you can't hang on to their reins because you'll frighten them. They'll think there's something wrong, and they'll think you have no confidence in them. So you have to sometimes let go of the reins so that they realize you're confident in them, and you're going to have a beautiful ride, and you're giving them their head to do things. And I think that's super important when you apply it to teams. Also in things like when I love to jump horses as well. And there's this thing about target fixation in business where you set objectives and targets, and you think sometimes, what's the point in doing that? Because very often you're just going to be so head on trying to achieve that target, you don't look beyond it and you don't actually think of all of the possibilities. And rather than have that target, look way beyond it. And do you know what? You'll overshoot that target that year massively. And it's exactly the same in riding. So when I'm going to approach a jump, I never look at the jump because you think, gosh, I'm going to take it off. You look beyond the jump, and actually you get over that jump, and then lo and behold, there'll be a double or a triple. So you've got to jump again and again and again. The only way that you get over those is by looking far, far into the distance with your head kept high. So riding is a massive thing for me in terms of preparing how I am as a leader and how I view business as well.
Well, that's amazing. That's such a fantastic metaphor for leadership, leading in business. And I think what a fantastic place to leave this episode of the show. Sasha, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your personal leadership experience and a little bit about how you are doing things at Octopus Energy. I think there's so much from what you've shared and what the business is doing that we can all learn from and take away. So thank you very much indeed. If people want to reach out or learn more or connect, kind of, is there a way they can do that?
Yes, absolutely. I'm actually on LinkedIn, so that's probably the best way to contact me if people want to look me up on LinkedIn and message me that way.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Whatever you're doing, Zosha, I hope you have a great end to the day. Thank you very much.
And you. Thank you.
I hope you found that conversation valuable, folks. But most importantly, I really hope that you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result. If you did get value from this episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and subject matter experts. Do also visit ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again in the next one very soon, and lead on.